only agree with the first thing that the earth is not flat. The rest
Cool.
is disproven.
Well, no, these have all been pretty, well, the last one's my opinion. Or the this one's my opinion also, but no, we know that Earth is billions of years old as much as we know that it isn't flat.
Do you know what a limiting factor is?
Oh no.
Do you know what a limiting factor is?
Probably not.
Right, a limiting factor is something that limits or puts a stop on how old something can be. Right, it can be applied in different contexts, but in the context of deep time, a limiting factor is something that limits the age of the universe, humanity, the world. There's many limiting factors. So if
Yeah,
we
that's not how you tell how
define,
old something is, but go ahead, King.
if you see a ship in the ocean, how do you go about dating it?
Date a
How do
ship
you
on
know
the
how old?
ocean?
You find a ship that has sunk in the ocean. How would you go about dating it?
You could look for artifacts on it or
Yeah, exactly.
certain
So you look
historical
at,
records tied to the manufacturing. Like style of it.
yeah, so if I find a coin from
How about if
1782,
you
what does
find a
that mean?
rock, how do you tell how old it is? How about instead of
Well,
steering us into these completely irrelevant examples, you deal with the actual science behind the claim in question?
because I want you to understand definitions before I get
I
there. I
completely understand what you mean by a limiting factor now. It's something that puts the minimum age or the maximum age on something because if it has blank characteristic, it can't possibly be older than blank. Although that's going
Right.
to be essentially an argument from ignorance, I think, if it's not well established. But anyways, how do you tell how old a rock is?
Right,
I'm just
before we
testing
get
to see if
there,
you actually know.
so you have to make assumptions. Science are built on assumptions, right?
That is
You
correct.
have
Yep.
to make it. Yeah, so b before I get there,
Rigorous. And then we take our assumptions and we rigorously test them to see how often they ring
no.
true. And radiometric dating always produces consistent, reliable. Well, I'm sorry, 99% of the time produces consistent, reliable results.
So, do you believe radiocarbon dating gives consistent, reliable results?
Yes, it can even produce consistently reliable errors when we know that there's interference, such are you going to bring up the snail example?
No, I'm not going to bring up snail example. So, what's the half-life of carbon 14?
5,730 years,
Well done.
I
So,
think.
if that's the half-life of C14 after 60,000 years, what percentage of will we find significant amounts of C14 in a substance that is older than say 60,000 years?
It's like a tenth of a percent or something like that, or maybe 1% or something like that, which is
Yeah,
indistinguishable from the background radiation. This is known by scientists. Good thing we don't use
so
carbon dating to tell how old the Earth is.
But in anything that used to be organic, we know that how carbon dating works. Because it's a closed system after the organism dies, it becomes a closed system because it can't take in any more C14 through eating or breathing. Do you agree with that? That's
Yeah,
part
but
of
there's
the
carbon
assumption.
14 in the background. You can take metals and put them into the spectrophotometers or whatever the thing that separates all the atoms is, and it'll
But do you
detect
know what
carbon
the closed
14. There is
system?
no carbon 14 in metal, but there is background carbon 14.
But do you understand what a closed and open system is?
Yes, I do. What does that have to do with what I just said?
So what I'm distinguishing is that an
Timothy, other
organism
than
that
nothing,
dies,
what you just say have to do with what I said about background radiation?
background radiation doesn't get into a closed system because it's closed.
It absolutely does. So I don't know
No,
what you're
that's the
talking about.
definition of a closed system. A definition of a closed system means nothing can get added or subtracted to it. An open system
How
is
does a
where
piece
the
of
earth.
metal get carbon 14 in it?
Then I didn't talk about metal.
I know I did, which is why I asked you, what did what you have to say have to do with what I had to say? And you weren't able to tell me. Well, what we're talking about is, why is it that instruments, you can put metal in them and it detects carbon 14. Now, why is that?
So I will explain, right?
It's yes, you will, or I will mute you. So go ahead.
So I believe that carbon 14 is being generated in the environment all the time.
Yep. Right? So there's background radiation of carbon 14. Okay. So we're done with that. Go ahead. Now you can make whatever point you wanted to make. Now that you know and acknowledge that there is carbon 14 as background radiation, so it's going to be detected by devices which can artificially make something very old look young. Now that we know that, now that your argument has been completely obliterated, go ahead and make whatever point you wanted to make. Were you going to make the argument that, oh, they find carbon 14 in things that scientists say are millions of years old? Is that what you were going to say?
They find it.
Yes. Okay. That is what you were going to say, but we now know that it's a completely dishonest red herring because we know that there's background radiation of carbon 14. So it's completely irrelevant. We know that after something like 10 half-lives or whatever, the amount of carbon 14 is indistinguishable from the background radiation. That's why it has that upper limit.
That's not my argument is.
It was 100% your argument, but anyways, go ahead.
No, it wasn't. I'm talking about significant amounts of C14, not the background level.
Give one example.
On fizz.org.
Give one example.
Go to fizz.org and look
at... F-I-Z-Z.
No, F-P-H-Y-S.org. There's an article, I don't know if they removed it, on finding carbon 14 in dinosaur fossils. They said in their article that either these were contaminated or...
Okay, so they're contaminated then. What's the problem?
They're not contaminated.
They're not contaminated? They're not?
They are not contaminated. They say that there can only be two conclusions. You have to lie and say that they're contaminated. They're not.
How did you determine that it's a lie?
Because there is no way for a closed system.
Oh, your own ignorance is not evidence or an argument. So can you do something better than... There is no way.
In the name of Jesus Christ.
There's no letter R in the word no, by the way. So can you do something? Did he say, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus Christ? What did he say? Chat, what did it say at the end there?
So, you don't think God exists, right?
Nope.
Why is that?
I've never heard any good evidence. I couldn't possibly begin to know which one I even should pick. What do you call that? It's like the paradox of choice or something like that. When you give people more choices, there's actually an interesting study that's been conducted. When you give people tons of choices, they're almost guaranteed to be dissatisfied with the choice they make. But if you only give them a couple choices, then they tend to be more satisfied with the choice they make. But anyway, there's just an uncountable, conceivable, possible gods. So it's like, why bother believing in any one of them?
Okay, but... what if I have some evidence to show you?
An argument isn't evidence. So with that in mind, what evidence do you have?
Wait, so you don't consider arguments evidence?
No.
What?
The argument proves nothing other than itself, unless it has empirics to back it up.
All right, but how can you empirically prove God? Because that exactly. doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no good reason to believe in it.
I guess if you don't accept arguments, then yeah, you're right, but...
Do you accept the God-defeating penguin argument?
What is that?
If God exists, then the God-defeating penguin necessarily makes it not exist.
No, I don't accept that.
Why not? It's perfectly... I have an argument that proves it. By its nature, makes God not exist. So it follows deductively that if God exists, then the God defeating penguin necessarily makes it not exist.
So, yeah, but how do we know that penguin exists?
It has to exist. The argument proves that it exists.
But like, this is not a good argument. I have a good argument.
I know. Yeah, I know it's not a good argument, but it's the same argument.
Look, let me just tell you.
I define it to be necessary, so it can't not exist.
How do we explain consciousness without a God?
Your brain.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm not talking about the conscious behavior. I'm talking about the actual qualia.
Oh, that's easy. No such thing.
There's no such thing as qualia?
Yeah, if qualia is that which is explained by God, then it doesn't exist because the God-defeating penguin renders God to not exist.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. Qualia is that which is explained by God, but that means it cannot have any ontology because God doesn't exist because of the God-defeating penguin.
My point is...
It's called philosophy. You're just not very good at it.
Yeah, but like the reason I believe that qualia makes God exist is because I think it's more likely for God to have a mind, so therefore we have minds.
How does that follow? God, none of the properties that God has, we share, I wouldn't say. Why would we share this one?
Because feelings.
Yeah. That's a pretty good argument as far as people that make the arguments you make go. Which is to say it's an absolute dog shit argument.
I'm happy to announce that I can now offer signed copies of both of my books. This is because I've reopened my merch store where you can get your very own Spanky T-shirt, and more. If you don't know, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions is a collection of responses to about 100 of the most common anti-scientific tropes. The book is meticulously detailed, it's been fact-checked by real scientists, and it's written in a clear and easy-to-understand way. Evolution, the Big Bang, creationism, flat Earth, all of that plus more is in there. Facts That Aren't True is a collection of over 150 commonly held beliefs that are not true. Each claim has a story behind it. You'll learn the history behind the claim, the science that disproves it or partially supports it in some cases, and lots of side stories and tangents. Categories include the human body, history, religion, animals, nature, language, and a hodgepodge of miscellaneous facts that aren't true. So if you want to be equipped to handle the misinformation that you see me tackling here every day, get a copy of one or both of those books for yourself. Thank you.
I don't know what you mean by instantaneous expansion, if you mean inflation. Inflation actually isn't the Big Bang. It precedes the Big Bang. But that's theoretical at the moment. It does a good job of explaining some discrepancies we see in the universe, but the Big Bang, just the idea that we live in an expanding universe, and a few other particulars, that's as well established as Earth going around the sun.
Yeah, absolutely. The universe could be expanding, but the idea—I thought you're proposing the idea that we come from a single point, and then there was expanded to the size of a grapefruit, and then somehow magically stayed there for a few milliseconds, so that the heat evened out, and then suddenly inflated. Is a bonkers idea, isn't it?
Well, if you could do the math, you would see how the math checks out. So, like, physicists don't just make stuff up.
Yeah, but when the first Big Bang didn't include the period where it had to stay at the size of a grapefruit for a while. So with maths, you can create anything you like, don't you? You can prove anything with maths. Because maths is just numbers. You know, if you want to do that, it works. But it doesn't actually prove anything, does it?
No, which is why we carry out experiments and observations to try to confirm these things. I mean, I don't think inflation is as crazy as the idea that the speed of light is a fixed constant, and no matter how fast you're going, it's always the same in your frame of reference, and that the faster you move through space, the slower you move through time. I don't think it's more wild than that idea. There's absolutely nothing intuitive about that. And at first, it was just purely mathematical, but now it's been demonstrated to be true.
Yeah, well, the speed of light is not exactly fixed, is it? It flexes. It's not exactly constant, is it? But
no, it's a constant. A photon can be slowed down, but that's not the same. That's not what we mean by the speed of light is a constant.
Well, I was understanding that the speed of light is not exactly a constant at all, but it's close enough. It's got an average speed, right?
No, it is.
Well, I'll have to check that out. The last thing I read is actually it flexes. It's an average constant, but it's not. It does actually move up and down. But how can all that mass move from a central point to inflate instantly? That's what I'm trying to say. That's the crazy thing, isn't it?
I have no idea. No, I don't. That's right. I don't really know how special relativity works either, but a physicist would know.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
It seems to have been thought out. It seems to have been created with some sort of intelligence. Like the trees work with this. We need the oxygen, you know? I mean, it seems like this whole system has been so intelligently made. It really makes me question, you know? Do you have any info you could give me on that?
I mean, so what you'd want to do, there are lots of ways we could attack this, but I don't think it looks designed at all. I think natural selection and evolution can perfectly describe those things, or at least describe them to a perfectly satisfactory level. But I mean, if you think that nature just has the absolute hallmark of design because of the way things are, well, if it wasn't designed, what would it look like?
Probably like, okay, so like, probably chaos, right? Nothing would really make sense, right? Like, the trees wouldn't help out the birds and the squirrels and us for breathing and stuff like that, right?
But why wouldn't they?
Well, I mean, if you're designing something, it has to have a purpose. It has to have like at least I think so, like, I'm not going to make something that has no purpose for being made.
Let's think of some examples that just dispel this. So,
okay.
Are you aware that there are some bacteria that are now evolving to be able to partially break down plastic?
I did not know that.
So that is really happening. And then like in Chernobyl or something, I think there are like really weird microorganisms that are now able to survive despite the crazy amounts of radiation. You know, there are examples like that. There's also what's another good example? Any kind of virus, well, not any kind, but a lot of types of viruses would be good examples. So there are what we call like zoonotic viruses. Those are viruses that used to only infect one kind of species, but then they jump species to be able to infect others. So like for us, that would be like maybe mad cow. I'm not really sure exactly what mad cow does to you. I'm not sure if it's like the virus actually infects us, but you know, smallpox or Ebola or hantavirus or SARS, which is like one of the types of coronaviruses, bird flu, you know, things like that. You're aware of those.
100%.
Okay. But now nobody thinks that, oh, well, humans were made so that they could get infected with viruses from other animals. Nobody thinks that. That's silly. And nobody thinks that, oh, the reason we made plastic was that so that the bacteria could break it down. I was like, no, that's not what's going on. What's going on is these organisms are evolving unique adaptations to exploit in their environment. So how does a tree and a bird work together? Well, the tree, the modern tree and the modern bird didn't just pop into existence out of nowhere. Their commensurate or symbiotic or whatever it is relationship has formed in the environment over time, gradualistically. So one wasn't made like for the other.
Right. Okay. I'm seeing what you're saying.
Yeah. And so like, right, well, we can just take that and apply that actually, to nature.
Right. Yeah. I was gonna say that you can take that and put to a lot of things, man. All right. Well, hey, I really appreciate you, brother. For real.
You're welcome. Well, you didn't say thank you, but I guess it was heavily implied. Theory.
What's a true theory?
A scientific theory.
Is quantum mechanics true?
Yep. It corresponds with reality.
In a black hole singularity, is quantum mechanics true?
That's more theoretical. We don't know the nature of what exactly is at the middle, in the center of that black hole.
Yeah, so it's a theory, so it's not true.
Yeah, there are different kinds of theories. Do you know what true means? Or what's the way you use the word true?
I'll just say something that has proof.
And by proof, you mean evidence?
Well, proof and evidence are two different things.
Yes. So what do you mean by proof?
I don't know. Say I robbed a bank and there was CCTV of me robbing that bank. That would be proof.
Yeah. Evidence. Yep. There you go. And so a lot of people, common definition for true is that which corresponds with reality. And because science is a methodological system of studying nature, it has a very, very good ability to create descriptions, models, whatever, that match reality, because it's the study of nature. So with everything's all hunky-dory here.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the black hole cosmology?
Not so much.
Because that's another theory that contradicts the Big Bang theory.
How does black hole cosmology contradict the Big Bang?
Well, black hole cosmology is that we are inside of a black hole and we have a parent universe, and that parent universe also has a parent universe. Everything's within a black hole.
Why would that contradict the Big Bang theory?
Well, because there's no Big Bang with a black hole.
Is that the case?
I assume so.
These ideas contradict. Not directly, the black hole universe idea doesn't necessarily deny the Big Bang. It reinterprets it. Instead of the Big Bang being an absolute beginning of everything, it could be the beginning of our local bubble of space-time that formed inside a black hole. I mean, multiverse says something similar to that as well, but multiverse doesn't contradict the Big Bang. However, standard causes... So, no, I think the whole Big Bang thing is just a different interpretation of the exact same data that created our current Lambda CDM model for the Big Bang.
Yeah, there's also the Big Crunch theory as well, which is different to the Big Bang theory.
No, it isn't.
Is it not?
No. We live in an expanding universe. In very, very simple terms, that's the Big Bang. If at some point the universe starts to crunch, that doesn't contradict the Big Bang. That's just something that will happen in the future. That's like saying, well, one day the sun will expand and swallow up the Earth and destroy it. Therefore, the Earth doesn't orbit the sun. No, it definitely does. One day it won't, but it definitely does.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that recently. You know how our universe is expanding and black holes, they're also expanding. So that theory works that we're inside a black hole.
Yes, that's why that could be an interpretation of the observable universe as we see it. I don't really know too much about that idea. So you'd have to talk to a physicist if you want to get really into the weeds on the details of, do we actually live inside of a black hole? So, sorry to disappoint.
No, that's all right. Well, that's all I have to say. But yeah, keep doing what you're doing.